Hey everyone, how's it going out there? I'm excited to share with you part one of my epic chat with none other than the legendary iconic B.B. Buell. But before we get into that, I want to tell you, of course, about patreon.com/Craig and Friends. But I also want to tell you about Twitch, which you already know about. So I'm going to tell you about twitch.tv/Craig and Friends. That's right. There was a Thanksgiving live stream. I did it sort of a tester, kind of did it under the radar a little bit just to get the kinks worked out, because you always got to get the kinks worked out, don't you? And it was a lot of fun, and there's going to be a lot more, including the David Bowie holiday extravaganza, or rather, the Videodrome Discotheque David Bowie holiday extravaganza. Many of you listening have been to the Bowie parties that I've thrown in the past in person. Now is a way for all of us to enjoy online together when we have to be alone or separate. I don't know if you're under lockdown. LA is back under lockdown. Since that's the case, look for Live from Lockdown on Twitch and YouTube. Yes, check my socials every week, and I'm going to be announcing maybe a day ahead of time when I'm going to be sitting there doing a Live from Lockdown. Then you can join and chat in the chat box or do the things that you do on Twitch. But you know what those are, because you know why? You're a sophisticated crowd. So sophisticated of a crowd, in fact, that right now you're heading on over to patreon.com/Craig and Friends and checking out the reward tiers, selecting which one works best for you, signing up and supporting the show. Yes, that's right. Now there's even more excitement because there is a new feature to Movie Club, and that is Live Watch, starting this Saturday, December 5th at 2 p.m. Hollywood time, with the David Bowie Jim Henson classic, Labyrinth. And for Labyrinth, I'm taping a very special Movie Club this upcoming Tuesday with James St. James, Jake Shears, and Crystal. So you have time to hop in there now, get your questions and comments in for that Movie Club, and also get ready to watch the film with all of us. And you can join Hot Dog Club for movies every Saturday this month. Also, a hot bonus episode from the vault from my stay in San Francisco with Cherry and Sophie coming very soon this month, along with an episode I just taped with our friend Maddie, and a chat with Remy Kesemir. And for anyone who wants to enjoy the Live Watch with all of us but does not want to get to the Movie Club tier, this Movie Club and the rest of this month are available to the $5 tier. So head on over there now, sign up, and slide on in to the Thunderbuns of Hot Dog Club. Okay, now that that's all taken care of, it's time to hear part one of my chat in Nashville with B.B. Buell, which was taped at the worst Airbnb I've ever stayed in. Well, one of the worst, anyway. I've only stayed in a couple real stinkers. This was one of them. There was no fridge. You'll hear more about that in the episode in part two as well. But that's what we're talking about with the ghost and the kitchen and electricity and so on. Oh, and the theme song's coming, but I just didn't want to wait any longer on this episode. I mean, it's been over a year and a half, right? Anyway, happy holidays, everybody, as best as we can make them. And here's the show. Dear listeners around the world, on this episode of Whimsically Volatile, I'm thrilled to present to you a legendary model, mother, singer, tastemaker, muse, manager, survivor, and thriver. That's right, I am speaking of none other than the one, the only, the magnificent B.B. Buell. Welcome, B.B.
Well, what an introduction.
Well, I couldn't do anything smaller than that for you. I mean, thank you so much for joining us.
And of course, thank you.
Yeah, and with us, a special guest co-host, Katie Bagnier.
Hello.
Hi, Miss Katie. I think I've got more descriptions than Cher has last names at this point.
I love that.
Right? Right.
I used to love that about her.
Oh, right.
Her last name thing.
What anyway. Are they again? Cher. I'm trying to remember what sarcastic is that right?
Her name, which yeah. We'll not even try to say anymore.
Right. No, there's no point.
And then she became a Bono.
Right.
And then she became an Allman. Right. And then she became. What was her next husband? Was there another husband?
No, I don't think so, because she was with that Rob guy that was
right.
In the papers and
the
everything.
Bagel boy. They called poor
that's
guy.
Right. Bagel
what
boy.
A terrible thing to call somebody.
I know.
Even though bagels are delicious, maybe yeah. He was gluten free though. So. Oh,
that's good view. And of course, and we're also joined by Jimmy Wallerstein. I'd say hello, Jimmy.
Or Jimmy Walls, we call him.
Oh, forgive me.
Hello. Yeah. Oh, it's okay.
Okay, good. Don't need to bleep.
All
that,
is
that.
Forgiven, darling.
Oh, thank you, darling.
They used to call him Jim Walters when he was in Das Damen. But back to Cher. I love her. I worship her.
And I'm imagining you've met her because you seem to have
met
everyone.
I really haven't met her to the degree I would have liked to have met her. My friend Michael Schmidt is really good friends with her.
We did a taped a show with Michael, actually.
Well, Michael is my hero. We met in the early 80s in New York when he first came to town and he was a goth boy.
Oh, right. That's right.
And he was with Raphael, you know, the famous Mary Raphael from the Cycle Sluts from Hell. Mm-hmm. And he came over to me and asked me, he said, are you B.B. and B.B. Buell? And I said, maybe. And he said, oh, and we just had a moment, and we bonded, and he's been one of my lifelong friends ever since.
He's a wonderful guy.
Oh, the best.
And so amazing what he's done.
He's so unique. I've never, I think his eye and his vision is so unique, but he's a one of a kind.
Yeah, and the Club Squeeze Box was which was at Don Hill's, and that was just a magical time.
Some of the highlights of my life were singing at Squeeze Box, mm-hmm. and with the Squeeze Box band that became my band, that I took on tour. David Matos and became my guitar player, and I Squeeze Box healed me, because in '98 I went through an incredible, devastating, horrible divorce with the shapeshifter, and we'll leave it at that.
And
I called up Don Hill and I said, you know, I had been managing not just my daughter but the shapeshifter for several years, and I was hankering to get back on stage. I was just feeling like I had lost myself a little. And I called up Don Hill and I said, save me. I've got to get back. You know, everybody left in the nest. Liv had finally left home in 97. And the thing with four heads moved to another coast. And so I was looking to find my spirit again. I thought I was going to continue in management. But then I realized that although I had the skill and the connections, that I didn't have the soul for it.
Okay, now, what kind of soul does it take to be a manager?
You have to be a little more ruthless than I'm capable of. I'm too much of an artist.
Right, sure. And also, you know, it seems like throughout your life, you put a lot of energy into other people's efforts when, you know, you had your own thing to
say. But on the side, I was always doing my own thing. Sure. This is what people don't understand. Half the people that have come into my life have come into my life because they sought me out.
Sure.
And I don't know if it's an energy thing or why people like certain energies in their life when they're creative.
Right.
But I feel this has been going on throughout history.
Right.
I think, you know, it's not just women. I think the friendships between people like Oscar Wilde and Lily Langtree.
Yeah.
People don't realize they weren't lovers. He was gay, even though he was married. And she was a very famous, legendary muse or courtesan or professional beauty, as they used to call her. But she would say things to him in her parlor that he would turn around and turn into a story or a poem.
Right.
And who knows that? Only people that really dig.
Sure.
So you get used to having a certain place in the life of creative people. But when you have your own creative energy, that in my case, I was doing art and drawing and singing and doing all that stuff from a very young age.
Right. You note in your book that you would keep song lyrics, you would in your journal, and
that all became songs eventually.
Yeah.
And well, Patti Smith was the first person to encourage my poetry. And which, I mean, you can't get a much better person than that.
True. No, you can't.
No.
My first poem I showed her was this stupid poem I wrote called, and it just said, "You needle, you pin, you prick." It was just three lines.
Yeah.
And I showed it to her and she said, "Do you know how good that is?" And I said, "No, is it is it good?" She said, "It's really good. Keep writing."
Yeah. And when did you meet Patti?
In 1972.
Was that at Max's that you met her?
No, I didn't meet Patti at Max's. I met Patti because I was living with Todd Rundgren at that point, and he had dated her.
Right.
Oh,
and
wow.
she meant a lot to him, and her opinion meant a lot to him. So he sort of wanted us to meet.
Yeah.
And I don't think she expected it, or he expected it, or I expected for us to hit it off so well.
Right.
At first, I was a little bit jealous of the relationship because he would be very canoodly with her and stuff. And I had never met a woman that looked like Keith Richards before.
Right.
So I was a little intimidated. And then she said to me, "Bibi, you look like all the great beauties, like, you know, Nico and Anita Pallenberg and Marianne." She said, "You have that same thing, you know."
Yeah.
And I was like, really? I'm very enamored, and of course hung on every word that came out of her mouth, because I just thought she was a fascinating person, and she hadn't yet become a singer.
Right.
She was a poet at this point. And then suddenly she and Lenny Kaye started to do those shows with Lenny on guitar going, making all these, and Patti going, you know, her unique way of reciting poetry.
It was like preaching.
It was. And she would even move like a preacher. A little bit of that rhythm. A little.
Had she already by that time, was she already with Alan Lanier?
Yes. When I met her, she was with Alan Lanier.
Actually, and Katie's wearing a Blue Oyster Cult shirt, actually. So it's
they were a couple.
Full circle.
Yes, exactly.
And they had that loft on 23rd Street. Mm-hmm. So I would just start going over there. I mean, this was before cell phones and emails and stuff. And Patty didn't like to answer her phone very much. Uh-huh. And I mean, I had a lot of friends like that just didn't answer their phone. And in those days, if you don't want to talk to people, you just took your phone off the hook, stuck it under a pillow when it went rear to tell you that it was off the hook.
Yeah.
And that was that. People would have to, you know, they would have to come to your house if they.
Sure.
So I would just show up at Patty's loft because I wanted to hang out with her. I wanted to suck everything I could learn from her because she had so much vision. And so I would just descend upon her. And some of the best times of my life were with her in that loft. I am not kidding.
One of the passages in your book that I found really touching was the two of you at her loft singing in the hairbrushes because the both of you wanted to sing. I think at that point, she had written stuff for Blue Oyster Cult too. Like she'd written lyrics.
She was already a little bit ahead of me in having the opportunities to have that kind of. See, she was known as an artist. And
okay,
it didn't matter that she had dated all these famous guys.
Yeah.
Her persona of being an artist first took care of her being tagged as their girlfriend or whatever.
Right.
See, I did it the opposite way. I was somebody's girlfriend first and very visibly in New York.
Sure.
And became like this rock royal couple
right
out of the gate. So any artistic leanings that I had were instantly overshadowed immediately
by
sexism and by what we used to have to face back then.
One of the things that is really like the theme that really runs through your book is the double standard and the misogyny that
it's
is so
incredible.
Rampant. And it's still around, but especially then,
in
particular for around the time when you were seeing Rod Stewart, you know, it was like naughty BB, but like Rod was just considered
leggy BB. Yeah. you seductress, you know, I'm just like, please. I was a kid.
Yeah. But the guys were celebrated for being rascals at the same time.
And the myth about me and the funniest thing is that I'm not really the greatest, you know, sexual expert or I'm not somebody that's known for that.
That's not
going to be on my tombstone. Let's put it that way. And I have never started a relationship based on sex, if that makes any sense.
Sure, it does, because you would connect with these musicians because you had similar interests.
But also, I was young and I was romantic and I was in love and I wanted to be in love. I wanted the fairy tale. So I think that's what stalled my progress a little bit.
Sure.
Girls like Patty and Madonna, they were ruthless when it came to themselves. Mm-hmm. The men were their ornament.
Sure, yeah.
And their stepping stones.
Yeah.
And although I'm not saying that Patty didn't genuinely love
them, certainly.
But she had an ambition. Mm-hmm. And the only time I saw her throw that away was when she met Fred and went off to Detroit to raise two of the most beautiful children ever. Her children are two of the most beautiful human beings, Jackson and Paris.
You were the first person outside of Todd to know that she was going to be retiring for a while, right?
Well, I just happened to be there when I overheard the conversation about this being her last album.
Mm-hmm. Which must have been kind of shocking.
I mean, well, for a kid like me, it was like, what? But what I find most interesting about the era is that some of the guys, the behaviors that they went, you know,
participated in,
let's put it that way, we'll be kind. They would be in jail now. They would be arrested. 100%. They would be hauled off.
Sure. Like, for instance, consorting with Lori Maddox when she was, 14, 15?
Yeah, even though she was extremely smart, worldly. I mean, I met Lori when she was maybe 16. Yeah. At 15 or 16, and I liked her.
Yeah.
She was so much fun.
Yeah.
I remember my friend Danny Hutton from Three Dog Night was on tour, and I was coming to L.A. He let me stay at his house. He said, here's the keys. Call my road manager if you need anything. I arrived at his house, and it was stocked full of food. He had this big pool table. And so Lori said, can I come hang out? And she came over and it was just us.
Yeah.
And I was all of 20 myself. Mm-hmm. And I just remember her lying across the pool table and inventing this pool game that I had to shoot the balls around her or I couldn't, it wasn't fair. And I have never laughed so hard in my life. Yeah. She was enchanting. And then she went in the kitchen and cooked like a 6-course meal.
Wow.
I mean, like from scratch.
Yeah. And at what age again?
Like 15 or 16.
Yeah, that's a mature person.
Yeah.
So I just think times were different. I'm not saying that it's okay to have sex with children because
right.
it's not.
Right.
But at that time, our minds were not conditioned to think that way.
Everyone had a different sense of things.
Well, I mean, Elvis Presley had been with Priscilla since she was 14.
Right.
You had Jerry Lee Lewis, you had Jimmy Page, you had these guys that were known for their liking young girls.
Sure.
So when Jimmy ran off with me and sort of left Lori in the lurch, I even though it was only 20, was yeah. considered an older woman.
And do you think that's a like societal thing as well? With like
yes.
because I mean I up until quite recently, if you were 18 and not already out of the house and engaged and playing on kids, then
I know. And even if you went to college when we were young, you left home. Nobody
right.
stuck to the nest. I mean, everybody yeah. couldn't wait to get out.
Yeah, it's sure. a little different
now. You can't get kids out of the house. They stay yeah. home till they're 40.
Right.
And yeah. it's great. And they're all entitled, and they get to be on their parents' insurance till they're 26.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot
good
of differences.
Bills. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Katie. What?
Oh, just there's a lot of differences.
There are a lot of differences.
It's insane. Yeah. It's insane. And women, we always had to carry the burden and bury a little Freudian slip the burden of being, you know, being described by what we had done or who we had dated.
Yeah.
So the first thing you did is really what you were known for.
Sure.
So like if you're Miss America in 1973, you're going to be Miss America for the rest of your life, even if you go off and win an Oscar and a Grammy.
That's right. a great point. Yeah, I can think of like Vanessa Williams.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's just forever. It's like a brand on your ass. Mm-hmm. Like, and so I think it started confusing people because I was known, you know, for dating cool guys and
you're modeling
and
as well.
Modeling. Yeah. And then when I did Playboy, which was supposed to be a liberating, defiant move, which just escalated the sexism and made rock boys think when they met me, oh, I must be something else, you know. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that I would ooze whatever that was that they say I was oozing when the camera would get on me.
Sure.
It was like just, it was art to me.
Right. It's part of the package of
when you do
something.
A photo shoot for a magazine like Playboy, it's very clinical. It's a job. Nobody's there going, ooh, sexy.
Yeah, right. You know, there's not a hot vibe in the room.
There's hair, there's makeup, there's unbelievable poses that leave you crippled for a month after you get out of the shoot.
Yeah.
And when you do the centerfold, they used to use those old-fashioned cameras.
Oh, okay,
The ones you have to put the slide thing in.
Yeah.
I mean, they did. This is how they used to do the gatefolds. They don't do them like that anymore.
Sure.
But and magazines still had staples in them, but you had to hold your pose, and sometimes it would make you twist and and it was unbelievable. You could not move an inch when that camera was on you for the gatefold.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
And you'd be there for hours and hours and hours.
Hours.
Yeah.
Trust me, nobody cared about your naughty bits and nobody cared about anything but the light and the shot.
Yeah.
That's why Playboy looked like it did.
Right.
And that's why the other ones didn't look like Playboy.
Right. And you had sort of a weird meeting with Guccione, right?
Yeah. Well, that was because the person that had photographed me was shopping these photos, and I made it very clear to her right out of the gate I only wanted to work with Playboy if in fact we were going to go that direction.
Right. I'm sorry, I should add for the listeners who don't know, Bob Guccione was the creator, publisher of Penthouse. Yeah.
And so she talked me into meeting with him just to hear out his offer.
Yeah.
And I just remember going to meet him, and the first thing he told me to do is drop trowel.
Right.
You know, he wanted to see if I had any scars or anything.
Because you couldn't tell from the photos.
I'm like, I have no scars, and I'm not dropping my trowel in the middle of the room for you. And he said, well, that's one of the requirements. And I said, really? I said, well, I guess that isn't going to be me. And then I turned around, and I was walking out the door. I dropped my pants and pulled them up again. And of course, he thought that was charming and hilarious, but yeah. I just didn't. But I didn't, you know, I was not interested in that publication for what I was trying to accomplish. It was Patty who said Bridget Bardot and Jane Barkin and Jane Mansfield and Marilyn Monroe. She was listing off all the Ursula Andrews.
Yeah.
What's her name? Linda Evans.
Oh, sure.
You know, all the great beauties that had Betty Page that had done Playboy.
Right.
So my brain was more into that ilk.
Yeah,
and
sure.
They were all, I mean, they were all artists. They all were known for other things than just Playboy. So it would make sense for you.
That's what I mean. If a man takes his clothes off and he's dangerous, he's...
Burt Reynolds was celebrated for being so wild. Yeah.
And there you go. It does nothing to their reputation or their persona.
Except enhance it.
Yeah, in some ways. Unless you're, one of those guys that never did anything but pose for Playgirl.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
A Kato Kaelin type. but with women, it's different. And then they start to call you. Then you get all the names.
Yeah.
And there's all the the things that they have to hang off women.
Right.
That I've always fought because I just know you're going to call me a name because I dated a cool guy.
Right.
Why don't you compliment me on my taste like you did the guy?
Exactly. Again, the double standard.
What
were some of the names of a groupie, right?
I still try not to say the word, not because I
can bleep it. That's always fun.
Not because no, it's fine. We're saying it. We're going to deal with the G word. Not because I hate the word, because the first time I ever heard the word, I was still in high school and I heard it connected to the GTOs and the girls from California.
And so for those who don't know, Frank Zappa produced this terrific group, Girls Together Outrageously, which featured Pamela DeBar, Miss Christine, and Miss Marlene.
No, my favorite's Mercy.
Miss Mercy, of course.
Mercy was my favorite. And Miss Christine, who also dated Todd.
Right.
So it went like this. Todd dated Miss Christine, then Patty.
Yeah.
And then this girl, Marlene, that broke his heart. But that was brief.
One of the songs about.
Yes. And then me. So Patty was really, before me in a way because the Marlene thing, he was pretty wounded by the time I met him. I mean, he was only 23, so you can imagine.
Gosh. Yeah, sure.
You know, his heart had already been beaten to a pulp, and I was 18. So, it has been difficult because I don't like what happened to the word.
Mm-hmm.
People started to look at it as meaning that you went backstage and you had sex with boys backstage.
Sure.
Or you only wanted to date a boy because he was a rock guy.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? Do you know how many of these guys I've told, piss off, go away, I'm not dating you. I don't care how rich you are. I don't care how successful you are. I always followed my heart.
Yeah.
I can genuinely say that every man I ever dated, even the shapeshifter, there was a moment of trueness and authenticity.
Right.
But sometimes I would get myself into situations that I would have to get myself out of, eject.
Okay. Yeah.
Because of drinking or drugs or abusive behavior, which I've always very kindly kept confidential. Not that I don't support the Me Too movement, but I don't need to tell my stories to have healed.
Okay, yeah.
I have a beautiful husband of 20 years sitting right here that has helped me heal.
And that's lovely, yeah.
And he's my soulmate, and he's the person that has been with me through thick and thin.
Right. And when did you two meet again?
In 99,
right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, 20 years ago. That should do the math. Yeah.
And I'm very good friends with my daughter's father.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, my two most important male relationships are what they should be. The father of my child and my husband.
And so everyone has a different path with healing from things like that.
That's
some people, a public addressing, it helps them, but others not. Yeah.
And sometimes I think people like Rose McGowan, who have very powerful messages, they get involved in the urgency of what they're trying to say to the point where people start to turn on them. And I watched the public beat that poor woman up.
Right.
And I've known Rose since the beginning, and mm-hmm. she's a beautiful person. She's a beautiful girl. She was almost in Empire Records. Do you know?
Oh, really?
The Robin Tunney part.
Oh, that makes total sense. I can see that.
See it.
Yeah.
100%.
The Robin Tunney part of Deb.
Yeah, yes. She shaves her head.
It was between Robin and Rose. And Rose was getting ready to do a TV thing, so she could not shave her head.
Oh, yeah.
Robin was like, I'll shave my head. So that is really the only thing that
kept her out of the.
And I loved her in those Greg Araki films.
Oh, yeah.
Doomed Inner Generation.
Oh, yeah.
And we would run into, when Liv went to Sundance for her first film, Heavy, mm-hmm. we hung out with Rose. And I watched this beautiful, beautiful girl's spirit just become devoured by people's cruelty.
Yeah.
It broke my heart.
Yeah.
And then she started dating Marilyn Manson, as you know.
Sure.
And she would do things that she thought would... you know, put the fist up the butt of authority. I understand that well, like, but going to the Grammys in a naked,
that was a look.
It's a bit extreme, but I can understand her wanting to make a statement like
that. Yeah, sure.
I think it's very cruel and unkind when the gang mentality, look what they did to Stormy Daniels.
Sure. Certainly.
I believe her.
Of course.
Don't you?
Too. Yeah.
100%.
Absolutely.
But a bunch of frustrated housewives in middle America hate her because maybe their husbands are doing the same thing. So instead of allowing a voice and listening to the stories and just putting it into your bag of knowledge, people would rather shame and destroy.
Right.
And I think that leads to, you know, destructive behavior.
Sure.
And I have never allowed that. I've never allowed myself to sink into drug addiction. I just keep fighting back by just keep doing what I do.
Sure.
That's my way to fight.
Right.
Really? That's what you think I am? Well, watch this. Come see me live and I promise you will go home without a face. Just
I was missing mine for a while. So,
yeah. Yeah. I'm glad it's back.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I was worried, but you know, like I think
we don't need our faces.
No, exactly. No. It's too hot for a face out in Nashville right now.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a new look.
Yeah. So we Katie and I went to see you play at the Rock and Roll Residency at what's the venue? Is it Mercy? Is
that Mercy right? Lounge.
Mercy Lounge. It was
one
fabulous.
Of our favorite rooms.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, and you did a fabulous rendition of what was the first song actually?
Hey Little Girl,
and then followed it up with a storming rendition of I Want to Be Your Dog by, of course, the fabulous Iggy Pop, who you once puked on.
Yes. Well,
Well, because he
kissed
gave you.
And puked.
Well, right. Well, because, I mean, he gave you something he maybe shouldn't have given you.
Oh, yes.
So, you
I
know.
Mean, that story is pretty well, Doc. You can go to pleasekillme.com, everybody, and read my fabulous story about Iggy Pop.
It's a beautiful tribute.
Well, I
to
love
Iggy.
The man. You know, I mean, listen, we're not, none of us are perfect, including Iggy Pop, and I'm sure he's had his share of underage girls too, but
one would hope, right?
but the thing is what I judge a man by is how do you grow? How do you change? Mm-hmm. Look at the man he's become.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a
good
point. Yeah.
Let's face it.
He could have gone a couple different bad ways.
He could have. And he met this amazing woman, Nina, and he's married and he has a beautiful wife. He has a bird that is the coolest bird on earth. And he's just... when you make your mistakes, you're supposed to become a better person.
Yeah.
And that's what he did.
I think that's a really interesting thing to talk about, too, because a lot of times people get hung up on their mistakes and beat themselves up.
Ugh.
And I think an important thing I like to get across in the show a lot of times is that everyone makes mistakes or finds themselves falling on hard times. It's about how you handle it and how you move forward.
And how you accept it, because... every mistake we make is our destiny. We are meant to make the mistake because maybe in a past life, we had to work on this issue. I believe in the complexity of why we're on earth.
Sure.
So I think that every road, every twist, every turn, every mistake is your destiny, your soul's journey. Therefore, it's going to lead you to wherever you're going to go. This is where people trip themselves up is by hanging on to anger, hanging on to animosity, allowing things that maybe happened 20, 30, 40 years ago to still permeate their lives.
Sure.
And toxic.
Yeah.
And I find I've watched so many of my friends get brain tumors, get cancer, and get sick, not just because of drugs, but because of their hatred. They're still so mad at what's his name for what he did.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, the guy's dead. You know, you need right. to like get over this.
Yeah.
He's
absolutely.
Wherever he is right now, telling you the same thing, I'm sure.
Yeah, right.
And you're just going to run into him again if he comes back to this planet.
Right, yeah.
You're going to run into him again, maybe as your cat. So you better get over this.
Yeah, right. You know? Yeah, because it doesn't do you any good to hold on to that stuff.
The toxicity that, you know, and then you get the whole complexity of the emotion of jealousy.
Oh, sure.
Jealousy causes people to say horrible things about other people, but then you just have to take the source and realize they're talking about themselves.
People do often comment on themselves when they're ranting about other people.
When you hear them going crazy about that person, they're looking in the mirror.
Yeah.
So that's how I've learned to live my life, because I've had a lot of pain, a lot of rejection, a lot of shame, a lot of judgment,
yeah,
a lot of cruelty. I've had people try to rape me. I've had people try to hurt me physically. I've been through all that shit.
Sure. In your book, you mentioned a couple instances where people have drugged your drink.
Oh, yeah. Tried to kill me.
Yeah.
I mean, right. I had somebody actually tried to kill me one
time. Wow.
By giving me a drug that they said was something else.
And it would turn out to be elephant tranquilizer.
Well, and if I had died, everybody would have thought I just OD'd.
Yeah. Oh, she must have been a junkie, that kind of thing. Yeah. Well, you see who she runs around with, that kind of nonsense. Yeah.
And I've even had people make up stories about me because they want people to think a certain thing about me. So, oh man, she had the best drugs or whatever. No, I was never a pharmacy.
Yeah.
Would I be sitting here at 66 with perfect skin if I were? I mean,
probably
no.
Not.
Work. Yeah. No, ma'am.
Would I go to Katie?
That's right. So we should tell folks that Katie owns a fabulous brow studio and is a genius at what she does.
Oh.
Yeah, an artist.
An expert.
Yes.
Thank you.
She is the saver of the brow.
Damn good brows.
That's right. What's the website?
Damn good brows.
Yeah. Okay. Damn good brows.
Yeah.
Damn good brows, bro.
That's the Instagram. That's the easiest.
Well, the Instagram. Yeah. That's how we do everything these days, isn't it? And I wanted to talk to you about your mother because I was really touched in your rereading your book. I'd read it a couple times, but rereading it for today. Would you like a tissue?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, I think it's the ghost. The ghost affects the electricity and then the allergy thing. Yeah, it's a pesky little ne'er-do-well. So
yes, I love ne'er-do-wells. So.
Well, don't, right.
You're welcome. Just don't cut yourself on the fan.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Be very careful there. And there's no kitchen, sorry. But I was really touched by how much your mother understood you. It seemed to know that you were meant for a different life than maybe the one that would be afforded to you by living in the town that you were in.
I think she was just being practical. I'm not sure she approved as much as just loved me blindly.
Right.
I think she would have much preferred that I go to school and play I mean, I could have probably gotten a scholarship for basketball. I was such a good player. I was a great player.
Yeah.
And I mean, if I had been, I'm not ashamed to admit that I was kind of a jock. You know, I loved swimming. I loved horseback riding. I loved basketball. I loved sports. I just did. And, but I loved rock and roll more.
Yeah.
So the thing is, I just think that we're born the way we are. And our spirits are formed. We choose our destinies. We choose our parents. We choose why we come to Earth. We meet the people. I knew at 10 years old who I was going to meet. I knew already who my people were. I picked them out in Vogue and in Teen Beat. And I'm like, okay. And on TV, on the Ed Sullivan Show. As soon as I saw certain people, I knew them. I don't know how to explain this, but when I look back at it as a 10-year-old, I would sit in my room and play with my dolls. You know, I still played with dolls a little bit when I was 10.
Uh-huh.
I still had Barbies. And I would pretend like this Barbie was Mick Jagger. And my Ken doll would be, you know, Alvin Lee from 10 years after. Because I thought he looked kind of like Alvin Lee.
That's fair,
And I, you know, my dolls were rock stars and models.
Yeah.
Basically. My scrapbooks had Gene Shrimpton and Twiggy and Penelope Tree in them and Nico and Marianne Faithfull. And I had this affinity. How do you develop affinities like that? How did Shirley Temple at 3 years old know how to do what she did?
Right.
Because her soul is ancient.
Yeah.
And I just think that we have glimpses, that we know who we are.
Even though maybe your mother didn't understand some right. of that stuff, she knew enough to be like, okay, well, I'll connect her with a modeling agency. And then you had photos done up and sent to Eileen Ford. And
my mother sent her my high school graduation picture.
Oh, right. Right.
I mean, just a couple of snapshots, but nothing professional.
Sure.
Wing and a prayer, a chance.
Yeah.
She just said, I'm going to send this in. We'll see what happens. Well, my mother had modeled. So,
okay.
And in the 50s and had hung around with her share of, some celebrities and, you know, had frequented the Cavalier Beach and Cabana Club in Virginia Beach,
sure.
and met Frank Sinatra. So my mom was a little more sophisticated.
Sure.
I remember her two best friends being these two gay guys that were decorators.
Yeah.
And none of my other friends even knew what a gay guy was.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so my mother had a sophistication and
a worldliness.
An insight into fashion and beauty and...
And diversity.
And pop culture.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so therefore, I think she wanted me to have success.
Yeah.
I think I broke her heart a little bit when I poo-pooed becoming a huge model. I had opportunities to, you know, be much more successful than I am or was. Mm-hmm. And...
You were basically on the sort of the track, right? Like Eileen Ford really had a...
Oh, I mean, I could have been a supermodel. I mean, to some people I am or was,
yeah. mm-hmm.
just because of some of the impacts that I left on the industry.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the moves I did as a model changed things for models forever.
Sure.
And I also developed a persona that became a sought-after, a rebel girl persona
yeah.
that now almost seems... to be the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All the models date rock stars now. They all date actors. They all date each other. Sure. They all mm-hmm. pollinate. They all fornicate. They all procreate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pollinate, fornicate, and procreate. And, even doing a daring picture with Steve, like kissing with tongues.
Yeah.
In those days, oh, that was such a scandal.
Yeah.
Now, you know, you see fashion designers tongue kissing with their muses and
right.
this one and that one recreating the same pictures.
Right. But when you did Playboy, that was quite a shock.
It was.
A lot of people wouldn't hire you for certain.
Well, if the fashion industry in America was very uptight at that point.
Yeah.
So therefore doing a nude when you were considered a fashion model was very taboo. Cosmopolitan would hire me still.
Yeah.
Viva. I did a Viva cover. I was able to do some kind of work in this country, but I was fired by Ford and was promptly picked up by Wilhelmina.
Right.
They were the two top agencies.
Yeah.
Wilhelmina had once been a Ford model.
Oh, right.
And then she defected. She died very young. She only died at 40 years old of lung cancer.
Oh, wow.
Well, I would sit with her in her office and she would chain smoke these long, skinny cigarettes. And she was the most beautiful woman in the world. Wilhelmina, Willie, as we called her.
Uh-huh.
And I remember going into her office and she said, well, you've posed nude. She says, we can fix that. We'll just send you to Europe. They don't care about nudity in Europe.
Yeah.
So that's basically what happened.
Yeah.
I went to Milan, Paris, and London. And before I knew it, I was working for Vogue. I was working for Harper's. I was working for Revlon. I was working for Wella. I was Inoxa Cosmetics. I was doing all the high-end stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They just did not care that I had done Playboy.
Right. But
America did.
More, yeah.
But once I got my portfolio cleaned up a little bit and came back to America and showed them all my work in Europe,
yeah.
it was sort of forgotten. But by the time John Casablanca from Elite wanted to sign me and did sign me briefly, I had already started to play music and I was not as interested in modeling anymore.
Sure.
And Rick Ocasek from The Cars said, if you keep modeling, you're never going to be a musician. So you need to, you need to do one or the other. And then in 80, he took me into the studio.
Okay. That's when you made Covers Girl.
Yes. And 79, 80. And 79, John Casablanca offered me a contract with Elite. And at that point, I was pretty sought after. I probably could have turned my entire career around. Mm-hmm. And I just... So these are the kind of choices that my poor mother, you know, of course, a mother would rather see her daughter on the cover of Vogue than on the cover of Hot Wax.
Right.
You know? So Hot Wax at the time was a magazine that it was spelled wax, like women in the military.
Yeah, yeah.
And they would feature women in rock, you know.
Right.
And I remember doing the cover for that with fake tattoos. Marcia Resnick, somebody had painted my arms. And back then, women just didn't, hadn't done that yet.
Yeah, yeah.
So everybody thought I had real tattoos. You could probably Google that picture.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, we'll post that with the episode.
But it's just interesting how, you know, you thought you had to make choices. Like, I got offered all these music videos during that period, too.
Uh-huh.
But I turned them all down because I didn't want to end up as, you know, a video girl.
Yeah, sure.
And that's what happened to girls like Bobby Brown and those kind of girls. They were known strictly for the videos.
Sure, Toni Catane.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And then they had a really hard time when they tried to enter into society and have real lives.
Right.
Nobody would take them seriously because they had done all these videos. So that's when we used to be judged for every move we made.
Right, right.
So when I would be in a video with Rod Stewart or something, I would say, you can shoot any part of me but my face.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, sure.
Smart.
So people thought I was crazy. They thought that I, you know, was like, well, why don't you just own it that you're a groupie, you know? And I'd be like, because I'm not. I don't even know, wouldn't even know what to do, what's expected of what you think a groupie is. I wouldn't know what to do with a roadie except ask him directions.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I just don't get it. I don't understand the cruelty that people have to lump everybody into this big pot.
And also to denigrate you because you're a woman in this environment. Instead, you know, like you're just a like-minded person, seeing a like-minded person.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But when you see me on stage, you don't get so much female energy. I emanate, I feel, I hope. I mean, I don't know what happens when I'm up there because I don't remember anything from the second I get on stage to the second I leave.
Yeah.
Some crazy thing comes over me.
Sure.
I have no memory. I have no idea how I can do some of the things I do with my body or how I can leap 60 feet in the air still at my age. I'm still not sure how these things happen.
Or swing the very heavy mic stand around.
The mic stand.
But I don't know. I'm being really honest with you that. There's no premeditation to my performances. They're stream of consciousness, they are immediate. I don't ever do the same thing twice. So therefore, I don't have recall. Mm-hmm. People will say, you remember that time you did that backflip? I'm like, no. I caught you. Thank you.
it's not a choreographed thing that you do in steps.
But I don't feel, at least from people that see me, come to see me and what they... from what they tell me.
Well, yeah.
I'm taking it from the perspective of people that enjoy my shows. I don't emanate like a real female energy. I sort of emanate, I hope, a sexless energy. Yeah. I move like Jagger anyway. My moves come from being a little child standing in front of the mirror trying to dance like James Brown and Mick Jagger.
Sure.
And trying to get those moves, you know.
Right.
That was important to me. The feet, the foot. the foot action. Yeah. You know, it was very important to me. And
yeah.
I would stand for hours, be 12 right. years old, and I would want to get that. And I would play Paint It Black over and over again on my little stereo.
Yeah.
And I would just, so when people go, oh, you have like a, you're not really a singer, you're a channeler. And I'm like, yeah, there you go.
Sure.
I'm a channeler.
And it's something about rock and roll, what it's the spirit of the thing.
And that's who I am. I yeah. mean, it's my DNA is just one big giant glob of rock. So being on stage for me is heaven.
Yeah.
It's my happy place. And I try to get more done in two songs than most people get done in 12.
Yeah.
And I like to wear audiences out. I like to tire them out good and get them really pumped up and excited and happy. That is where I get my joy.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping to see a full set sometime because that was the only time I've been able to yeah. see you, and but it was wonderful.
I love locking in. I love helping a crowd not be afraid to have fun. You know,
yeah.
you find
they
that,
so can be.
Yeah, they definitely can
they go,
be.
They can go so far away from then, the stage; it's awful.
I make them come right up in my face, yeah. and that is important. We have to learn to uninhibit ourselves. That's how we get sick. That's how we get cancer, by building all this shit up in our bodies and not letting it out.
Yeah, and also not doing the things that you want to do.
Exactly.
There yeah. you go.
And following the heart. And then I look at, I have other girlfriends that married well, or as they would say.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, she married well. Well, because they've married very rich men. But yeah. they have to tolerate their very rich husbands cheating right. on them.
Yeah.
They're never home.
Yeah.
And all these girls can really do is go shopping, which they enjoy. There's an emptiness, and there,
yeah.
I see the pain.
Yeah.
And then you get the girls that are sewn together at the hip with their spouse
uh-huh.
and go literally everywhere and then wake up one day and they're in their 40s and they've never had a life.
Right.
And they don't even know how to write a check.
Yeah.
They don't know how to manage a budget. They don't know how to take care of a house because they've never had to. They've been a rock wife or a superstar's wife for so long.
Yeah.
That they have no reference point.
Right, right. Or sometimes maybe a sense of themselves either.
It's, you know, I've seen it all basically. And I embrace and love all my sisters. Whatever path they've chosen.
Sure.
I might not agree with all the avenues of choice.
Right.
But I think sex should be legal. I think drugs should be legal.
I agree. Yeah.
I think all of this stuff should be legal and made safe.
Yeah, and then taxed.
Exactly. We could fit, and I think hemp should be the new way how we make paper and how we do everything that's killing the environment. Just grow hemp.
Yeah.
They said we could repair the entire ozone with hemp if everybody would plant some hemp in their yard.
You saw a lot of drug abuse in some of the models when you first entered the industry.
I did. And some of them were the biggest. I mean, I remember this one model, Pola.
Yeah.
She was one of the most beautiful. She OD'd and died and fell over on the steam heater in her apartment.
Oh, my God.
And they found her 4 days later, and she was literally cooked.
Oh, God.
Boiled Pola. And I remember when that happened. Everybody just being horrified.
Yeah.
But when you look at models like Gia, and I'm not going to mention a couple of the other girls that were very well-known drug users because they're still alive and they're very different people now.
Yeah.
But there were other models that would shoot up before shoots and have to have their track marks covered with makeup and would show up with dirty fingernails. I mean, when I was modeling, a lot of times, you know, in those days, unless you were doing a big shoot for Vogue or something, we had to do our own makeup a lot of times. Your agent would say you must have clean nails and da da da.
Sure.
And it was because of some of these models
uh-huh.
that hair and makeup and nails and all that became almost a requirement with each job.
Sure, okay, right.
Because these girls would literally show up unshowered, filthy,
right.
plop down in the chair, pass out, and wake up ready to go. And people would just let that slide because they were making so much money for the designers and the corporations and the products that they would let that slide.
And was also drug use in that industry kind of tacitly encouraged because it kept people slim?
Models in the 70s were not as skinny as they became.
Right.
More athletic. I mean, look at Jerry Hall or Patty Hansen or me and the girls that were popular in that era. I remember going to a shoot one time with Scavullo, and Janice Dickinson was at that shoot too. She was a really great model for the day, but Janice would run around with no underwear on, and nobody did that in those days, except she did. She was a real free spirit.
Yeah.
But we would get to the shoots sometimes, and the clothes, a lot of the girls, the 70s models, had broad shoulders, Kim Alexis. You look at look at these girls. They were built different.
Right.
They would just cut the clothes up the back and shoot you from the front or three quarter.
Yeah.
And that's how they remedied that. And women knew their angles. We were taught how to pose to make ourselves look skinnier than we were.
It was fun taking a photo with you the other night, because it was just like you were like just move that way, like slightly to the left. Well, you sat over there. You know, it was great.
You knew the light. You were like, the light's right there. We're going there.
You have to be careful, because if you shoot wrong, you can make a baby look bad. light, if it's not done right, can make anybody look bad.
Yeah.
You can make the youngest, most perfect person look like they have bags. But the thing about the whole modeling phenomenon is everybody let things slide if there was a lot of money coming in.
Yeah. Now, would you say that it was the same with the rock industry?
It was for a while, but I think now we're in the no tolerance zone, because now anything goes, and all the body, you know, the body image people are fighting, and we have these Ashley Graham girls and these beautiful women that are just like coming and going, you know what? Screw you. I want to go out and eat tonight. I'm not going to starve myself for a month for one photo shoot. And then it got really bad, because then you get these girls like Twiggy or Kate Moss, who I've eaten with, trust me, can eat us all under the table. Yeah. Katie, oh my God, who I adore, is another one I love. Very misunderstood and gossiped about incorrectly.
She's very close to your daughter.
Yes. Yeah. And I've known her since she was 15.
Wow.
But, these girls are built the way they are. It's genetic. The Hadid girls, I like them because they have healthy bodies.
Yeah.
They look gorgeous. They're healthy girls. They strut the health. And I think that's coming back again. I think people are fighting. Look at Paulina Porizkova.
Sure.
She's becoming an advocate for women over 50.
Yeah.
And she's in Sports Illustrated flaunting her stuff. And 66-year-old Christy Brinkley.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what we need more of. And I feel like I'm making my statement that, no, I don't have to become like a singer-songwriter, singer-songy girl that sits there with just a piano and a dress. Why can't I keep rocking man style?
Yeah, exactly. You know? No, I mean, just like
why
the Stones.
You know,
yeah.
What I'd like to see happen is that somebody would shake this up a little. Remember Mrs. Miller?
I don't think so. No.
You're too young. When I was a young girl, there was this singer that came out, and she was an older woman. Her name was Mrs. Miller.
Mm-hmm.
And she sang all the rock songs in an opera way. It was hilarious. Like,
yeah.
Downtown. You know, and it was just hilarious. It was like remember the Shags?
That group? Oh, okay. The Shags.
Yeah,
oh,
my God. Yeah.
They were so bad, they were great.
Yeah.
But it was Mrs. Miller. She had massive hit.
It's been a hard day's night, and I'm living like a dog. It's been a hard day's night. I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the thing that you do will make me feel all right.
Broke all the rules because she was an older grandmother.
Right.
But the persona of a grandmother.
Yeah.
I mean, Priscilla Presley was a grandmother when she was in her 30s and didn't look like a grandmother. So that persona didn't carry. But I'm just saying that what I'd like to see now is for some more rules to be broken. It started in film. Now the older women are all getting the nominations now. And and the women power shows. I'm loving all that.
I saw that like Reese Witherspoon has her own production company now for older women specifically.
Well, for women that are not 12.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, it's upsetting. When I was a young girl, you were considered old once you hit 25. Now, they let you go to at least 35.
Yeah.
And then if you haven't established yourself, it's a real battle. But then you see your Nicole Kidmans and your my daughter, Liv.
Yeah.
these girls that are effortlessly taking their careers with the age.
Yeah.
You know, people say, I can't believe Liv's 42. I would have never known that she's 42.
Yeah.
Well, just do the math. She was born in 77. And I'm very proud of her because she's carrying that torch. She's growing into her career and taking roles that are challenging and doing accents and doing being in cast with all English people and her being the only American.
I love that show, by the way.
Harlots?
It's so good.
It's divine.
Yeah. It's always Handmaid's Tale and then I watch Harlots.
And her performance on Harlots is just, I just can't believe it. To reach that deep. I don't know if you watched her in The Leftovers. I'm being a bragging mom.
Oh, I watched The Leftovers. She was great in that, too.
I mean, that scene where she put the grenade on the bus with
children. Oh, yeah.
My daughter's
no spoilers.
She genuinely scared me. I turned to Jim and I said, is that my daughter? I'm scared. You know, I called her up and said, honey, you're scaring me. I'm sorry, mommy. Her chops have been honed.
Yeah.
I'm very proud of her. It's like when Liv cries, you cry. I see her being an old woman as an actor and growing very gracefully into this career.
Yeah.
And I love that. Are we going way over our time?
No. Are you kidding? No. I hope you're all right. I'm having a wonderful time. I hope you are too.
I just don't want this to be edited to death.
I only edit like if someone has to sneeze or if like I just edit just to clean some stuff up. But everything's staying in.
Because we're saying such important things right
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
I don't know. We're on a roll. I think it's our ghost.
I think.
Thank you, ghost.
Thank you, ghost, for just like being a kind of a cool
Probably
one.
Probably a former sex worker.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
Especially in this area.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's why I felt comfortable here.
Represent.
Yeah.
So, I'm excited about how we're
progressing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I'm still in my 60s because I wouldn't want this kind of progression to be happening when I was much older because I'd like to be able to travel with it some more.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, you can.
You know, and take it. When I see Debbie Harry on stage at 73 years old, still blowing everybody's mind.
Yeah.
And you have Patti Smith, Stevie Nicks. There's still Chrissy Hynde.
Yeah.
There's still some of the warriors out there and we've got to keep embracing them and we have to allow them to have hit records. Cher.
You're like one of the biggest Cher fans I know.
I'm obsessed.
Well, I love her too. I'm obsessed too. And I love her Twitter account.
Oh, it's amazing. She uses so many emojis. And
she speaks in her own language and her spelling has much to be desired, but I still love it.
Oh, I love that though. And she's unrepented about it. She's like, no, that's what I do. So don't even
come. She dropped out of school at 16 and she's very upfront about that.
Yeah.
And she's very, very honest.
And of course, Cher had a big role in Michael Schmidt's career as well because of the chainmail outfit that she saw in a store and she just called him up out of the blue.
Mm-hmm. And he invented that.
Yeah, that's right. He did.
And so I feel that what's happening right now with women and shows like Pretty Little Lies and all these shows and even Sex and the City to a certain extent was one of the
At that moment,
definitely
was one of the breakers.
Yeah, Samantha, there wasn't really an older woman.
I think we got to go further. Yeah. I want to see women in their 60s and 70s winning Grammys.
Yeah.
Winning them, not getting the special award for surviving. I want to see people on the charts because their music is good.
Yeah.
Not because somebody bought their way in.
Or right.
The industry, the music, and I feel like, like you said, the film is getting there, but music is still kind of, it's messy.
It's confused now that we're winning because of Dina LaPault, winning the war of getting paid for our music. Dina LaPault, you can follow her on Instagram.
Tell us a little bit about
Dina. I met her through Steven because she also was one of Steven's lawyers. But Dina was the big advocate and the torch carer for the big act that was passed for musicians to get paid
better. Right. Streaming.
And for all that stuff. And she, it's incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, now they're even going to have to start paying us for YouTube. And
right. As they should.
Yeah, especially when you go and see something one of mine that there's like 40,000 people have watched it, and I'm thinking, I bet you I don't get a cent.
Yeah.
But now I might for stuff that I wrote.
Right,
you know?
You should.
So I'm just happy. I'm hoping that we can go even further.
Yeah.
As women and men and as a species.
Yeah.
And stop. Well,
and also with the fewer constraints on gender specifics.
Exactly. I shouldn't say just women.
No, but
and
see,
men,
that's
but
the thing.
We're flavors.
All, even the most progressive of us, it's what's, I guess, a convention or something that's been with us for so long.
The Indians and the Mayans all acknowledged five different types of people.
Yeah.
It's been acknowledged by enlightened spiritual societies. Sure. It's only us that think there's only two.
And actually, that reminds me of something interesting, rereading the book again, about the sexual dynamics of the 70s rock scene.
Right.
And also your relations with relationships with drag queens in the gay community. But first...
I wouldn't be alive if it weren't for my queens.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, seriously.
To start with the sexual dynamics... Interested when you said that in the book that a lot of the rock guys wanted to know how the other rock guys were in bed, and then how Mick would act differently around Bowie than he would when Bowie was not in the room. And it was sort of this, you know, a very, not slippery, but a very fluid situation with a lot of people.
You know, Bowie and Mick, though, they had a connection.
Yeah.
And even though I never witnessed them having sex, I think that's just a rumor.
Sure.
I'll just be honest with you. I never knew either one of them to be bisexual. Uh-huh. So this is why when people nail me on this, but Angela Bowie said that he was. And I was like, yeah, but Angela Bowie and I are two very different people.
True.
And how we like to remember situations is very different.
Yeah.
You know, she may have seen that. I never did. I mean, I'm not saying that I wasn't invited to have sex with them both, with others. But I never accepted the invitation. I mean, it's so funny. You know, when I was just 21 years old, I would sometimes have to take my phone off the hook. This one, I had my little powder blue princess phone.
Yeah.
And I would be sleeping, and the phone would just keep ringing. Jim knows these stories. He's like, I mean, he knows them better than anybody. And back in those days, you didn't have answering machines and stuff. So if somebody kept relentlessly, baby, please come over. we've got the best coke tonight. The most beautiful black girls. And we're just having such a good time.
Something makes me think that this is a call from Mick. I don't know why.
The only thing we're missing is our vanilla ice cream. You know, it's like, I would literally have to take the phone and put it under a pillow because of the horrible noises your phone would make when you would take it off the hook. And it would have to go woo, woo, woo for a long time before. But I'm not bragging. I'm just saying
that this is your life.
Yeah, that, exactly.
That's, you know, I would hang up the phone sometimes and laugh just because of how funny. First of all, just as my friend, I would think he was hysterical.
Yeah.
Because I knew he was winding me up and just being funny.
Yeah.
I just thought he was so funny. He was just one of the funniest people I've ever known.
He also seemed in the book to be a very caring friend.
Always. Mick is a good man. There's a lot of stories about him. I mean, he's cutthroat and ruthless, too. There's both edges to this man.
Well, people could be a lot of things.
But you don't become that successful without the ability to cut a throat or two. So you have to know when to tell people to fuck off.
Yeah.
And stop bothering your shit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and he is very good at that.
Yeah.
In a diplomatic, very English way. I don't know how he does it. But he does effortlessly. He's got impeccable manners.
Yeah.
But I would hang up, and I remember to this day how it felt. I would lay back on my waterbed because Todd would be off on the road. I'd usually be by myself with the dogs, and I would just say, I can't believe this. I just turned down Mick Jagger and David Bowie.
Yeah.
And God knows what gorgeous black person. I just, you know, what am I, crazy? Should I get dressed and get over there? You know, I would have these arguments with myself.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
You know, and then I would sort of giggle and say, wow, what is it? I mean, why did they invite me? You know, I would question why I was even invited.
Really?
Mick knew. He knew I wasn't into the kink.
Yeah, sure.
That's what was so funny about it.
Yeah.
So I always wondered, was it David asking him to invite me?
Okay, yeah.
Because I wasn't sure.
And with David, you said in the book that you guys got along great, but the sex thing wasn't really
We tried happening. One time, and it was just like we both just burst out laughing. It was just like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
And I'll just never forget it as long as I live. It's one of my favorite moments. He was like a little kid. He goes, let's just play with makeup. And he leapt up, and he got this big box of makeup that he had.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just sat there and played with eyeshadows and experiments with makeup. And
I mean, that could be a sexual experience in itself.
Well, it was. Yeah. It was incredibly fun. Yeah. I learned so much. He learned so much from me about foundations. And, you know, that's life. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't... Sex... It isn't always about sex.
No.
Well, and I think that's more what I meant when I was talking about the sort of queerness or fluidity of the people in that era. Because also you, if you were in that group or in that industry, mm-hmm. you sort of were allowed to pursue or investigate things that maybe if you were working a 9-to-5 job, you wouldn't because, you know, if you're David Bowie, you have a lot more license to experiment.
You could, and in the early 70s in New York, the city was bankrupt, so you could have a townhouse with a fireplace and three bedrooms and a bathroom, and it was two bathrooms and a kitchen for $600 a month. The first apartment I lived with Todd, and it was $200 a month on East 13th Street. And everybody helped each other.
Okay.
If somebody didn't have any money, you could feed them. Plus, Mickey at Max's, he would feed everybody.
Yeah. So tell people a little bit about Max's because some listeners, you know, might not know.
Well, I was going to bring up Max's because Max's Kansas City was the gathering ground, I guess you would call it. It was the back room.
Yeah.
I guess it started in the late 60s with that Warhol scene and all that. But I didn't come to New York till 72. But my first experience with Max's was a very small. I mean, it was probably, if you really... the size of this whole apartment.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
With tables, with red lights and booths.
Yeah.
And it was in the back. And there was a big phone booth here and a bathroom here. And then you would walk through and that was the rest of the restaurant.
Sure.
And then you would go upstairs to see live music or dance or to do all that. But the back room was sort of like a sanctuary.
Yeah.
And another thing that I miss about artistic real New York was that everybody hung out together in the arts. It was models, writers, photographers, poets, actresses, actors, stage actors. It was set designers, dress designers.
Yeah.
You know, I met Betsy Johnson and Anna Sui and people like that, Marc Jacobs. I met them all, you know, hanging out.
Right.
Yeah.
Not as a model.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so everybody congregated and there was a camaraderie. Everybody wanted to help everybody get their goals.
Sure.
And nobody really had to worry about having money or not, unless they wanted to buy a Warhol.
Yeah.
but everybody took care of each other.
Uh-huh.
And I was lucky. I lived with Todd and I was making, you know, pretty good money in the times I would model. I mean, one good modeling job, the money could last me a few months.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
And that's why I was able to fly myself places and buy myself cool clothes.
Yeah.
And plus, I was really into shopping and making outfits out of lingerie.
Uh-huh.
When we had when things were tight or if I was on a budget, I would just go buy some camisoles and some corsets and things like that.
And whip something up.
Whip it together.
Yeah.
And have my drag queens teach me.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So is Max where you first met drag queens?
I think that's when I first met people that I didn't know were drag queens.
Oh, sure.
When
I first
met, Lou Reed was dating this beautiful transsexual named Rachel that I had no idea. I thought was just a beautiful girl.
Yeah.
I was not, my first two crushes were gay boys. And finally, Eugene Siefker, he had this beautiful blonde Dutch boy haircut and he was a hairdresser.
Uh-huh.
I had the biggest crush on him and I really wanted to date him, but he sat me down very sweetly and said, "You're missing a very important piece of equipment. Should I explain this to you?" So I'll be honest. I did not understand. I could not. I didn't have gaydar, as they say. I got crushes on people, and I didn't care if they were gay or straight. They would be them that would have to explain to me why I wasn't their cup of tea or why I wasn't going to be invited to this party.
Yeah.
No, BB, I don't think you would enjoy the baths. I don't think you would have fun there.
Yeah.
And I would be, why? But I want to come. You know?
And unlike many of the guests on our show, you're not a fan of poppers, as I've read in the book. Yeah.
No, and neither is my husband. Somebody that will remain nameless, a very big rock star, tried to court my husband one time with poppers when he was young boy.
I'll have to get that name after the show. Yeah.
But yeah, poppers, no, I don't like that feeling. Or the huffing Carbona. There's people that rug cleaners stuff too.
Yeah, Carbona. I remember because the Ramones song, I was like, what is this? But then I think that was pre-Google. I was just looking at a record.
I'll never forget Dee Dee Ramone one time sitting in the corner at we were having a party at our house and he was sitting there and he had this rag and he had this bottle in his.
Yeah.
I said, it said Carbona rug cleaner. I said, Dee Dee. He goes, oh, baby, it's fabulous. You're doing your, and he goes, I said, your brain goes, and that's fabulous. He goes, you have to see what I mean. So I have got to admit, I one time huffed some Carbona.
Well, look, you know, you could try that.
How can you say no if you don't know?
I was curious.
Yeah, and you heard it was fabulous.
I mean, and I heard it was fabulous. So I huffed the Carbona. I get the and suddenly there's nothing. It's just this void, and you feel like, whoa. You know, that did not like it. Did not like it at all. And people did not realize that Dee Dee Ramone, not only was he one of the smartest people, he was a brilliant songwriter.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And a brilliant stylist. But because of Carbona, and then later other things, he would come off kind of dumb. You know, he would talk, and you would think, oh, Dee Dee, you know?
Yeah.
But Dee Dee was brilliant.
Yeah.
And so I saw the things that made other people screwed up.
Sure, yeah.
And I didn't want to follow in the footsteps.
Yeah, and you saw a lot of that, right? I mean,
I didn't like the ugliness of heroin.
Uh-huh.
And the ritual. Everybody sitting around with the needles and the grossness and the blood and the ooh.
And the obsession too, right?
And it was just gross.
I was like,
that is not for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is too dark.
Right, yeah. Right.
Now roll a big fatty and whip me up an omelet with some good shrooms. That I'll do.
Sure.
Although not at this age, I won't be tripping. No, 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 no. Yeah. That's for the youth. That's when your brain is forming.
Yeah. You don't want to trip and then get on Twitter. Ooh. That sounds like a party. Oh, right?
Well, sometimes I wonder what Trump's doing in the morning.
Right. Seriously,
with some of those tweets, these 5 a.m. tweets. I'm like, dude, really?
It's like Ambien or McDonald's.
What is this?
I don't know.
I think it's the McDonald's. Yeah. I mean, that's a
McDonald's
pretty
enema
drug.
Is more like it. But it's like. Oh my God. Oh my God. I hope my mother doesn't listen to this. But anyway, you have to have that gene that makes you self-destructive. Because a lot of the people that I've watched die, they couldn't help it.
Sure.
They had a disease.
Yeah.
And it just one thing led to another. Whereas with me, one thing did not lead to another.
Yeah.
One thing would lead to never again.
In your book, you talk about how, for instance, like there was other people who could do drugs at times, but it wouldn't completely consume them, like Todd had an experimental time with coke, or other people, you know, doing stuff, but unlike, for instance, Steven, where it was just,
oh no, he's got that wiring.
He
is an addict, so therefore you give him one of anything and then he wants all of it.
Sure.
Bring it all.
Sure. In his book, he talked about how it was Lunesta that
brought him down later after sobriety.
Which, and of all the things, it seems so benign. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but over-the-counter drugs and these also some of these fancy herbal substances they're giving people now are very dangerous.
Yeah. Like that Bath and Body thing that we gave you.
Yeah.
No, but right. Really I promise I won't snort it.
It's bath salt.
Okay,
so.
No, just rub it on the body and then just wait.
Yeah. Oh, wait, there's something else.
Yeah, there's something else.
There's something else for you.
I didn't know if we'd save it for the end, but since you brought it up now.
Well, we'll save it.
Okay, we'll save it.
Yeah,
the anticipation.
Yeah.
Ooh. But I'm just saying that nothing makes me happier now than just the way I feel when I wake up in the morning.
Sure.
That innocence, that childlike. Like, I have a rule. I will not drink a drop of alcohol or anything before I go on stage.
Yeah.
Because I love to go on the raw adrenaline.
Yeah, exactly.
That thing that we got when we were children.
Right. Yeah.
There's nothing like adrenaline.
Yeah.
To me, it's the sexiest drug there is.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It's cheap too,
by the way.
Yeah. Cheap date. But I also get a little annoyed with the self-righteousness of some of the people that are in recovery.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they preach, but yet they're chain smoking while they're preaching.
Yeah.
And they think that's fine. Whereas I think that nicotine is a drug and an addiction.
Oh, it certainly is. Like, I'm enjoying some right now.
But why? Yeah. But yeah, but you're not smoking a cigarette. You're trying to wean yourself off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you're making an effort. Have you ever been to an AA meeting?
I have not. But I know that there's a lot of cigarette smoking.
Ugh. I have gone accompanied. I'll let those things name remain.
Sure,
name
various them. People.
Yeah. I've never needed treatment because when I don't want to do something, I just don't do it because I'm not an addict.
Yeah.
But I have had many friends that are.
Sure.
And they've asked me to come to these meetings. Yeah. And I've gone. And I've even gotten up in the middle of an AA meeting and given my self-righteous rant about why is it okay for all of you to take prescribed pharmaceuticals and to chain smoke your asses off at every break. Mm-hmm. Please explain to me why that's okay and why smoking a joint isn't. And I mean, I had my asshole ripped with the replies. You would have thought that I had defected from the church or something.
Right, right.
Because there's no comparison between marijuana and nicotine. And I'm like, dude, yeah, you're wrong. Nicotine will kill you. Marijuana will not.
Nicotine's far more addictive.
And they call it a gateway drug. And I'm like, it can be medicine. I mean, sometimes after gigs where they used to allow smoking.
Oh, God, yeah.
Every scrap of my clothing would have to be washed and in some cases just thrown away.
Yeah.
Down to my underwear having to be smelling like nicotine, like cigarettes.
Yeah. We were at a karaoke bar, at Santa's karaoke, which is fabulous.
Santa's.
So much fun. And it was actually kind of charming to see people smoking indoors again until we got back and I changed my shirt and I was like, oh God.
Yeah. It gets into your...
Oh, I mean, my hair, I feel like I washed my hair that night because my rule is I will not go to bed with... Because that's going to get on my pillowcases
and all that.
I washed my hair. And then in the morning, I was like, it still kind of smells.
Yeah. Exactly. And there was only light smoking going on.
Yeah, it wasn't
that
crazy.
But I also, after that rant, I feel that people have to do what they have to do to get well.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, true.
But what's the point of being sober if you're not going to stop all that bad shit?
Yeah.
Well, true. But then again, so the Katya, the podcast partner, is an inveterate smoker, knows it's bad. But I feel like sometimes it's that one thing that keeps people together, kind of, or at least for them.
And
that's what they're thinking.
Somebody I love very much described it to me one time as a warm and fuzzy feeling, a friend.
A friend, right.
Like,
yeah.
Like a little moment of clarity or connection. And I'm that's a cigarette.
Yeah.
But then I have to say, in their defense, I have felt that way about a joint or two.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I get it.
And also, I think that there's a strange double standard in general with substances where alcohol is looked at as sort of benign. Mm-hmm. But any other drug, you know, like you talk to a hardcore drinker and you tell them about mushrooms and suddenly they're giving you a bunch of attitude and judgment. But really, booze is kind of as dangerous as anything.
Well, alcohol will kill you a lot faster than a marijuana will.
Yeah. Yes,
so, it will.
It's going to get your organs. It's going to get your brain. It's going to lead to dementia and Alzheimer's and all kinds of...
Or it could kill someone else if you're dry.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So I enjoy an occasional cocktail. I'm not a big drinker. I don't like to drink every day of my life.
Well, sure, yeah. I think overuse of anything is the
big
problem.
Yeah, but I like moderation. And I just feel that... I feel bad for people that have the addictive gene. It's a burden. It's a curse. You have to live with it. It's like having any affliction.
In addition to people living with addiction, so you've had to live with people who are dealing with addiction, which is something that people don't really hear enough about. And so what do you do when you're faced with that?
There's boundaries and respect. Like, I would never have a drink or smoke a joint in front of a friend of mine in recovery.
Sure.
Unless they were to that point. Now, some people I know have been in recovery for so long. They've been doing it for 30 years.
Yeah.
Never fallen off the wagon.
Yeah.
They can be around pot smoke and they can be around alcohol.
Yeah.
that they draw the line if people break out a rail.
Yeah.
Right, right, they're going to leave the room. But I have many addict friends that coexist very comfortably around pot and alcohol.
Right.
But won't go beyond that.
Sure.
So the key word with that is boundaries.
Yeah.
People have to know what their cutoff thing is.
That's true.
Some addicts stop and they just don't ever want to do it again.
Yeah.
Some addicts still feel tempted.
And some are triggered by.
And still feel the temptation.
Sure. Yeah.
And still have to be watched.
Right.
And monitored.
Uh-huh.
And then you have others that have gotten rid of everything else, but they don't want to give up pot, but they get shamed by AA because they don't want to give up the pot.
Right, right.
They've given up everything else.
Right.
Heroin, coke, alcohol, cigarettes.
Yeah.
And they just want to smoke a joint at 10 o'clock at night before they go to bed.
Chill them out.
And AA tells them, no, you're an addict. I'm sorry, but that's wrong to me.
Yeah, I think so too. I think kind of whatever works for people, really.
And I think that as long as you're not hurting others and you want to take care of yourself, but you're trying to be healthy, people have to lighten up.
Yeah, right. It's too much judgment and too much thinking about other people's business. And also too much shame, because we were talking about shame before as being a killer. And there's a shame is really one of the worst things in the world.
These legal drugs, I'm sorry, they're going to kill. What's happening now with, what's that one? Fentanyl.
Fentanyl, yeah.
They're cutting everything with that now.
Yeah.
I hear they're even soaking pot with it.
Oh, God,
So you have to be very careful. We live in a scary world right now.
It's another reason why everything should be legal, because then it's regulated.
Monitored and regulated, and you know you're getting purity and cleanliness. That's they finally had to do it with alcohol, didn't they?
Yeah, the bathtub elixirs.
You could die from drinking some of that alcohol people would whip together.
Yeah. Oh, I want to get back to a couple, two things that we were talking about before. You said that without Queens, you wouldn't be here. Queens saved your life.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I can't explain it. I remember when I met Candy Darling because she was in the hospital and somebody was coming to visit her and asked me if I wanted to come. I did not understand what it meant to be a man with a penis. But that was a woman, because to me, Candy Darling was a woman.
Right.
I didn't care what her body parts were.
Yeah.
But my Candy Darling story is extremely special, and it's one of my favorite stories.
Well, I'm excited to hear it.
But so I went to meet her, and she was one of those people that would make sure she had a little lipstick on, and when people were coming to visit her, she was sick. I guess because I was 18. And fearless and not understanding that there's a protocol with how far you go. I simply just asked her, you're the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. How can you possibly have a penis? I just asked her because I was curious.
Yeah, you didn't know. And
I mean,
a child.
Well, she just showed it to me.
And
it was really a great penis. It was like quite magnificent.
Yeah.
Quite normal.
Yeah.
You know, and I've seen pictures of Candy's penis.
Yeah.
And I just remember having an epiphany at that moment. And I said to myself, God makes us all different.
Right.
Some of us are both.
Yeah.
And that's when I became determined to have a penis without growing one.
A spiritual penis, if you will.
To strut my shit like a man if I felt like it.
Yeah.
But to still be a woman. I don't know how to explain how that epiphany came to me.
Sure.
I can only recreate and recount how I felt at that moment.
Yeah, I think that's good enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember barely knowing Candy Darling, but when Candy died, I swear to God, you could have committed me to an institution. I had never cried so hard in my life because of the profound effect she had on me as a person.
Yeah.
The overwhelming beauty that that woman had.
Uh-huh.
She was so beautiful.
Yeah.
It was very interesting,
mm-hmm.
the beauty. And I remember when I met Amanda Lear the first time, and everybody said, that's not really a woman.
People always questioned Amanda's gender.
But Amanda said, trust me, I'm a chick. Showed me her beeves and everything. And I was like, and David said to me, too, trust me, darling, she's a woman.
Yeah, I've investigated that.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. I've been there. So we had those kind of people. The doors were finally opening and people were finally finding comfort. Yeah. And then the horrible plague came.
Yes. Yeah.
Which changed everything. And the carefree, I guess you would call it almost Romanesque insanity that was New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
It came to a halt, a fast halt. This did not just affect the gay community.
Sure.
It affected everybody.
Yeah.
Because lots of people had sex with both gay people and straight people in those days.
Right.
So bisexuality, I mean, my friend who died of AIDS, she got sick from a blood transfusion, and her husband and her children did not get sick. And she didn't know she was sick for a long time.
Oh, wow.
So I try to tell people that your ignorance is nuts. You're not going to get this from making out. You're not going to get this from any kind of contact. You're not going to.
Or some people thought erroneously in the early 80s because all the confusion, a toilet seat or a drinking fountain.
Yeah. I mean, the ignorance was just horrible. And that's why I love Princess Diana, because she was like, no, I'm going to kiss this baby.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you ignorant people. But I was very into that when my friends started getting sick.
Uh-huh.
I remember kissing my friend who had the big sores all over him.
Yeah.
And I gave him a nice big kiss, and my friend was insanely mortified. And I looked at my friend and I said, you know what? I'm not going to get sick.
Yeah.
They need my love more than anybody I know right now. They need my kiss and my hug more than anyone.
Yeah.
You're stupid.
Yeah.
And I fought hard.
Yeah.
I mean, in the early 80s, I was, you know, really, because my friends were all getting sick at the same time. And by 85, 86, 87, people were dropping like flies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I kind of felt it was important.
Sure.
For me to be an example.
Yeah.
And help people that were stupid.
Once again, for more, and I mean a lot more, lots and lots of stuff and plenty of things, head on over to patreon.com/Craig and Friends. Check out the reward tiers, see which one works for you, and then sign on up, slide on into the Thunderbuns of Hot Dog Club, and support this show. All right, love you all, and talk to you soon.